You're listening to Pigs in a Podcast, the official podcast of the one and only K-Pig Radio. I'm Michael Gaither of K-Pig, and thank you for taking the time to listen to this interview with Reverend Freakchild. We play a lot of music at the Pig that you won't hear anywhere else, and we really dig when we can actually spend some time with some of these artists and talk about their music, what they're up to, what life on the road is like, and it's always in the capable hands of Jamie Confis. Jamie hosts our Neighborhood Night interview series, and this podcast is mostly a recap, a curation of those interviews. This one is going to be with Reverend Freakchild. He was born in Hawaii, lives in Colorado these days. He studied religion and philosophy, and over the course of his life has become quite the blues player. He's played with a lot of great people, has a hell of a reputation, as you'll find out in just a little bit. I want to remind you that if you found this interview on kpig.com, thank you. You can also subscribe to it by going to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and wherever you find your favorite podcasts. So whenever I curate, edit, and post one of these, you can get them automatically. So let's dive into it. Reverend Freakchild's latest album is called A Bluesman of Sorts. This is a nice, long, fun interview with a lot of chatter and a lot of shop talk and a lot of music played live at the Pigs. So here we go. Here is Jamie Confis with the Reverend Freakchild here on Pigs in a Podcast.
You are listening to K-Pig Radio. That's KPIG 107.5 Freedom, KPYG 94.9 Cayuca, San Luis Obispo, and KPIG.com. Streaming commercial free. It is Neighborhood Night, and that's brought to you by Sylvan Music at the corner of Mission and Bay for everything musical with friendly prices for every level of player. And don't forget about their repair department. That's second to none. All right. Thank you, Sylvan. And with that, would like to welcome onto the program for the first time in person.
Yeah.
What's up, man? Mr. Reverend Freakchild in the house.
Jamie, man. Thanks for having me. Yeah, we talked on air, I guess. Jeez, it started during the pandemic, so that's all we could do was talk virtually. But it's great to be here, and I've spent the last couple of days just in Santa Cruz, the end of the tour, West Coast, and I'm heading back tomorrow via, well, a few gigs. Yosemite, then Reno, Nevada City, Salt Lake, and then back to Colorado, where I'm from, Halen these days, Boulder, Colorado. But it's beautiful here, man. I'm thinking about moving here.
Yeah, I feel like this is your kind of town. I think.
Love it, man.
It's got a little Colorado, and you said you grew up in Hawaii.
I did, so that's next stop west from here, right?
Pretty much.
And that kind of ruined me for living anywhere. I thought everybody grew up going to school barefoot, right, and seeing endless ocean from everywhere they went on their little island, right? But, you know, it's turned into the colonialism just continues with the tourism. I went back, you know, a couple of times since I moved away. I moved away when I was 9, but I went to New York, Manhattan. You know, same thing, island, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, blah, blah, blah. All here's all the jokes. But anyway, you know, it's the days between, right? And I was up, I checked out Jerry Day at the Jerry Garcia Amphitheater on Saturday, was that? And what Dead and Co. was in town and all that stuff. And
yeah, it's all going on.
Yeah, there's a lot. And Melvin was playing whatever that was down there. He's played on a couple of Freakchild albums, as well as Mark Caron, who's
right.
Played with Bob Weir for years, and I guess he's gonna be playing with Dave Allen.
I mean, just looking at your credits, I would assume you've got some pretty deep Bay Area ties. But it sounds like you don't get out here all that much, or
I don't. I mean, I do. I mean, I guess I've been coming out here for like 10 years, but it's part of a bigger tour. This summer, I just did West Coast, and sorry, this is the old folk trick. You tune it up. You're talking while you're tuning up, right?
No, you do your thing.
And I love it out here. You know, I'm trying to convince the girlfriend to come out and move out here, but we're we love Colorado. The short days get me, you know, because of Hawaii's, you know, the tropics, you know, kind of thing. But I do, I love the California vibe, man. You know, I dig it, man.
You're coming at the right time. Like, July, August, we're better. It's better here than everywhere else, I feel like, you know?
Yeah. And I do that too. I moved to Seattle in the 90s, you know, I was playing in atonal rock and roll band, you know, but the whole grunge thing was happening. Nice. I moved there in July. By, you know, December, I was like, dude, I'm getting out of here. It's been raining for 2 months, you know, and everybody's like, dude, you got to get into the shades of gray, man. I was like, no, I'm getting in my car and going away, you know. But anyway, it's days between, and maybe I'll do one for Garcia, you know, and all the ancestors and all the amazing people here in the Bay Area. It's you guys, you know, it's like when the blues dudes went to Europe. And all the Europeans are like, dude, you have an art form here. And all the Americans are like, really? those are the guys just in our backyard. It's like growing fruit in your backyard. Like, these are just the peaches and plums and tomatoes and oranges that are right on the trees. And you're like, no, this is special stuff. So anyway, I think people know that Garcia is special and the Grateful Dead's an amazing. We were just talking about that before we got on air. Like, you know, there wasn't really jam band music. There was jazz. There was rock and roll, you know. Mm-hmm. There was bluegrass, you know. Talking about like Bill Monroe being an innovator. There wasn't really bluegrass as we know it today before Bill Monroe. So it just, you know, tradition and innovation. And so anyway, I'd love to do a tune just for all the ancestors. You know, a lot cool. of mothers and fathers and grandmothers and grandfathers did a lot of work here to get us to this present moment. And this is an old Blind Lemon Jefferson tune called See That My Grave Is Kept Clean. So there's one kind of favor you can do for me. Yeah, there's one kind of favor you can do for me. There's one kind of favor you can do for me. To see that their graves are kept clean. Two white horses following me. Yeah, there's two white horses following me. Yeah, there's two white horses following me. At the break of noon, shadows even the silver spoon, the handmade blade, the child's balloon, eclipses both the sun and the moon, and you understand that you knew too soon, ain't no sense in trying. Hornet threats, they bluff with scorn, suicide remarks are torn from the fool's gold mouthpiece, a hollow horn, plays waste the words that prove to warn, that he not busy being born is busy dying. While preachers preach of evil fate, teachers teach that knowledge waits, can feed $1,000 plates, goodness hides behind its gates, but even the president of the United States must sometimes have to stand naked, yeah. Yeah. Here and advertising signs, they con you into thinking you are the one that can win what's never been won, that can do what's never been done. Meantime, life outside goes on all around you. day. Yeah, there's one kind favor you can do for me. Yeah, there's one kind favor you can do for me. You see that their graves are kept clean.
All right.
Got a little Dylan in there. That's on Blind Lemon Jefferson
tune.
Yeah,
a little yeah. Bob in there. That's sweet, man.
Yeah, you know, Jerry was a big fan of Bob Dylan. I mean, who isn't? But you even get past his, you know, nasal whine there.
Yeah, yeah.
Or as Bob says, you know, he hits all those same notes as Frank Sinatra does, but just not in that order, you know, kind of thing or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, and that's a tune that Dylan actually did on his first album, and I think that's where he got the rundown, you know. But it just added that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's ever innovating, right? The innovators and the imitators, and it just kind of goes on from time immemorial into the future or whatever. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is cool. This is cooler than being on the phone. Or,
yeah, don't you seriously. Think? Thanks for having me. That's great. Yeah. And the new studios, man, like we were talking, I haven't been here since, like, probably been before pandemic.
Probably, yeah, so if you haven't been here. It's not as freaky as the last one, I will
say. Yeah, it seems a little... The other place just was like, wow, there have been a lot of dudes and cats through here.
Over time.
I love it, man. Funkified. It's coming together. There's a lot of stuff on the walls and CDs and stuff. Yeah. It's great.
Working on it.
So, well, speaking of CDs, right. You know, the latest Reverend Freak Child album, A Blues... I like to say it with a British accent. A Bluesman of Sorts.
Of Sorts.
You know?
Yeah.
Because, you know...
Yeah, tell us about the Bluesman of Sorts. I've been reading up on it and listening to it all day.
It was a strange... You know, I tried to kill off the Reverend Freak Child in 2012, you know, just didn't take. I wrote a obituary for him, you know? And my friends were like, yeah, good luck with that tour, dude. Everybody thinks you're dead now. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that is the consequence. But I've been studying with this guy, Robert Thurman. He's, you know, friend of the Dalai Lama. He's, you know, started the Tibet House, you know? Probably best known for being the father of Uma Thurman, you know, the actor. Anyway, he's this crazy old dude, and I think his wife used to be, before he was married to her, she was married to Timothy Leary. But anyway, he's, you know, Vajra yoga thing and doing these death contemplations. And the idea is that, you know, first, sort of death is certain. You know, I always quote Pine Top Perkin, who was Muddy Waters' piano player. I don't know if you know him, probably, yeah. And amazing dude, but he just, in one interview, he just said, you know, death, that's a debt we all got to pay. It's like, and that's a Buddhist truism. You're talking about birth, old age, sickness, and death. You know, it's just like, you know, pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. So then you start to contemplate, like, wow, it's uncertain. Like, it's not, you know, sure. Even if you're going to do the, you know, Jack Kevorkian, you know, assisted thing, you know, it's like, you don't know what's going to really happen or when exactly it's going to happen, man. So those two things, the certainty of death and the uncertainty of like when and where and how it's going to happen, those sort of getting together, they're supposed to manifest like this natural wakefulness of precious human birth and be like, hey, man, well, you know, I'm here. I might as well co-create with the universe. So I got kind of into that. And really, it was like a way to understand what we put together. There was a bunch of old outtakes that we had that I never put out. One was like Green and Brown Blues, which was like, why didn't I put this out? And it was really about, I came back from Amsterdam and I was rolling, you know, green leaf with just brown tobacco. And it became that. And actually the girl I was dating at the time had green eyes and brown hair, I guess, at the time. You know, we all got a past, whatever. Shout out to my current girlfriend, Lisa Marie, if she's listening. I love you more than anything in the world. Not thinking of anybody else. I'm only thinking about you coming home in a week. But we transformed it. I think I didn't put it out because I was mentioning that and then talking about taking a sip of wine. But this woman, Kamala Devi, who's a fellow yogi who I met on retreat, she's a Welsh person. And I can just hear her saying, oh, bluesman, you know, Freak Child, you're creative. You know, he's sort of a bluesman of sorts, you know. And she transformed it. And there's a video that she transformed. You know, the green and brown blues was, she's an eco artist. So she made a movie about like, oh, it's like an earth blues, you know? Yeah. And I found this great Albert Hoffman, who some of you might know is the synthesizer of LSD in the 30s, you know? He has this great quote about the you know, notice the brown and the green of nature, you know, and go out there and be part of it, you know? And So anyway, it all kind of came together like that, you know, and sort of this.
There's hindsight. Always the brown acid too.
Right. Exactly. Watch out for that, dude.
Yeah.
You know.
But that. So I'm looking at all these the credits for this. That one. That's a recording from around 2001.
Right.
So some of these are, and the next one is 1998.
Right. So some of these are really old. Some of these are new. Yeah. Like the newest track was, we got Aki Kumar, who's a Bollywood bluesman from out of San Jose. I was just hanging out with him the other night to put some harmonica on a track. You know, I Can't Be Satisfied. We did a sort of updated version of that. So it was all these hodgepodge of things, and I thought, well, if the Reverend had died, this would be an album that they would put out. Like, oh, you know, it was outtakes. And
yeah.
I don't know why I keep going to the British accent. It's so horrible. I apologize to anybody British out there listening. But, you know, it made sense to be like, oh, right, these odds and ends, you know. And then it became one disc, and we thought, well, if we're going to put out something that's like sort of a collection of, why don't we just put out all
put
these.
Put on a couple of discs.
Yeah, we put a couple of originals on it and a bunch of covers, you know. And you know, there are players, I think, if you want to talk about Bay Area heroes, there is a version of Big Boss Man, which is an old Jimmy Reed tune that the Grateful Dead, you know, Pigpen used to do. And, you know, I was the kind of, my mom was a classical pianist, but my dad was really into the blues. So I knew Jimmy Reed's version, you know, and, you know, I'm there getting stoned with my friends in high school and they're playing Grateful Dead. And I say, oh my God, this is Jimmy Reed. And they're like, no, dude, this is the Grateful Dead. I'm like, no, this is the Grateful Dead doing a Jimmy Reed tune. You know, it's like, oh, right, they didn't write that, dude? You know, it's like.
And I know the Elvis one. I'm kind of.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's all these different versions, right? So we brought it back to the blues. And I got Mark Caron, who, you know, used to play with Rat Dog and Bob Weir for years. And we have both of a real, we're just, you know, kids in a candy store when it comes to the blues stuff. And we had a great conversation over there at Hummingbirds in Fairfax, you know, over chicken and waffles. And
great
place, right?
It's my favorite restaurant. Right? Oh man, yes.
This is what happens when you get on tour. You're like, just find the good breakfast places. You know,
Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, and we'll give a shout out to them. Hopefully they'll
shout out and
send some waffles over, baby.
Yeah, hey, man, I love that place.
So anyway, we had a great conversation. We just sort of talked about doing some blues tunes, and we did this version of Big Boss Man. We sort of brought it back to the blues. So not only did I get my friend Chris Parker, who, you know. I don't know. I have the self-deprecating sense of humor where people say, you know, how much for the CD? And I'm like, oh, you don't want to buy that, dude. Come on. You know, you can spend $10 on something better. You know, it's like, why am I the worst salesman in the world, you know? But Chris Parker, I don't know why he wants to work with me, but this guy's worked with, you know, everybody. He played with John Hammond Jr. and Joe Cocker, and he was in Stuff, the band. You know, he played with Bob Dylan for years, you know, and he says to me one time on the New York scene, you know, we were just hanging out, and he said, hey, man, Freak Child, we got to get a project together. And I was like, okay, dude. And so Mark was like, cool, man, if he's playing on it. And then we got Robin Sylvester, God bless him. He's passed away. I think he finally passed away of kidney failure. He used to play in Rat Dog. And then we got Hugh Poole to play harmonica. And Melvin Seals.
Melvin Seals is on it.
Playing organ on it. So it became this wonderful piece. You know, Melvin really... As David Gans likes to say, maybe it was Garcia said that, maybe somebody else, but I remember hearing David Gans quote it saying that playing with Melvin was like it's like a big catcher's mitt. He just holds everything, you know? And so he was playing organ on that, and Hugh Poole, one of my blues gurus on the East Coast of New York, sort of New York blues Hall of Fame dude back there, sort of hippie blues man, he played harmonica on it, and then Mark Caron took this amazing solo. And that was like a culmination of this, like, blues and hippie stuff, you know? I was like, you know, I don't know where that tradition went. It was like, the Grateful Dead started out as a blues band in strip clubs, you know what I mean? Like, people forget that, you know? Pigpen was a DJ, you know? And that's how he got into the race records, they even called them, like the R&B and stuff back then. And the whole thing with, like, the hippie thing was, like, we know a blues tune. We drop acid, and 8 hours later, we're still playing the same blues tune. You know, jam band. You know, that was the advent of jam band.
Right.
So we sort of brought it back with that. And, you know, I do these versions of blues tunes, and they seem normal to me, and I play them for people, and they're like, dude, that's the most far-out version. Like, in I Can't Be Satisfied, I Can't Be Satisfied, the old Muddy Waters classic, I thought, why don't I, you know, chant some ohms over the solo thing?
Yeah, you know? It's like, oh, there
it
you go.
It seemed normal to me. It was like counteracting all that aggressive vibe, you know, of like, you know, I feel like slapping, you know, her or whatever and all that, like making a graveyard or resting place. And I was like, oh, that's a little harsh for me, man. You know, like, you know, what's the getting better all the time Beatles tune? Yeah. I used to be cruel to my woman, beat her, but now I'm changing my ways or whatever, you know, kind of thing, getting better all the time. So I thought, oh, put ohms over it. And then, like, the producer was like, And this is a guy that mixes like avant-garde albums out of New York, and it's like noise music and avant-garde jazz. He's like, dude, that might be a little far out for the blues crowd. So I approached Aki and I said, hey man, you know, can you put a little harmonica? Oh yeah, I'd love to, man. It's classic. And so it brought it back to the blues, you know. So that's more of like what this album was. It was like, what are these tunes? And we, you know, did a whole bunch of different tunes, you know. You know, what is that blues? And because part of it's become sort of this museum piece of, you know, what is the blues or traditionalist? I mean, I can hear my dad, you know, when I started playing the blues. And I said, Dad, man, you know, like they're billing me as like a blues singer. And he's like, a white boy singing the blues? Isn't that what they call rock and roll? And I'm like, yeah, Dad, that's actually pretty good. Thanks. You know, so I'll always be like, you know, howley boy from Hawaii, but that's where I grew up. But, you know, I have just, it's just in me and it's got to come out. Like the old Boogie Chillin' tune from Johnny Hooker's grave. You know, he's buried in Oakland, California?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he moved from the Delta to Detroit.
Well, I know he used to own the Boom Boom Room.
Yeah, and then he moved to San Francisco, and that was his big thing. And he had the Coast to Coast Band and everything.
Yeah, he's got a table still reserved for him there.
And really?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that guy's a hero of mine. You know, I just couldn't. It's just like the same way that my mom. I went to this classical performance one time. You appreciate this as a piano player. It was like a piano concerto or something like that, right? You know? Piano accompanied by a big symphony. And I was like, why do I know this piece so well? And I went back and I was like, Mom, did you ever play that piece? She's like, play it. I practiced it like 4 hours a day when I was pregnant with you. I was like, oh my God. Cause you know, like you're intimate with that piano. It's right there. And if you're pregnant. So, and then I think my dad probably in the middle of the night when she fell asleep was like, okay, I'll put some little blues on. Here's some muddy waters for your kid. You know, just like with the headphones or something. Here you go, you know.
Oh, yeah. Interesting theory. Yeah.
Right. Like that sounds like fun. Classical world's pretty intense, man. I mean, I love it. I go to the symphony with Lisa, you know, my love of my life, Lisa Marie. And that was a big thing we miss about pandemic, you know, going on a date night to the symphony and dressing up. And it's amazing, you know, that whole gestalt of that orchestra coming together and being like,
I've never done that before.
Oh, man, you got to check it out.
I got it.
I'm actually going out to Aspen to the music festival out there. They have a classical music festival, highbrow thing, and Holst's The Planets, which is like this trippy piece. I have to say, this is the connection with the psychedelic realm. And God bless Jerry Garcia and all that with the Days Between here. The last movement, which I think is like Saturn or Uranus or whatever, I thought I was tripping the first time I heard it or saw it or witnessed it because there's a choir off stage.
Oh.
So you're sitting there listening to the piece and you're like, I'm looking around like, does anybody hear that? Like, I don't forget the motif, but I'm like, I don't see a choir on stage. What the hell is that? Is this acid coming? Hello, Jimi Hendrix. You know, and I was like, oh, there it comes. Oh, and of course, you know, you read the liner notes, you know, and I'm like, oh, that's meant to be. That was really eerie. And it sounds like outer space where you're just like, wow, ethereal. So anyway.
Right on.
I'm a little out of my mind. I had a piece of chocolate cake after dinner, so I think that was the chocolate cake.
Well, we are talking of Reverend Freakchild, a bluesman of sorts.
Yes.
Is the new CD.
It's doing well, you know.
Yeah, it looks like it.
It's when you put them in the categories like that, I think a lot of people don't know what to do with the Reverend Freakchild character, but, you know, if you say, oh, bluesman of sorts, oh, it's a blues thing. Oh, okay. You know, it's getting a lot of play on blues.
Yeah, you're not interested in letting people kind of know what's going on, really. You're not about the explicitness. I've come to realize. I appreciate it.
You know? Yeah. I do music as description, not prescription. I'm like, okay, man, there's all these energies to work with. I got this great review from this Canadian magazine, and I went up to Vancouver, before pandemic, I had been up there, and I'm like, man, I got to do a tour through Canada. But anyway, a great review that said, you know, Freakchild doesn't care much about his you know, PR persona, but he really cares about the music, you know? And so for people like yourself, who's a musician, you know, they're grinning ear to ear because they get all the jokes. But in a musical way that serves the music and not the, you know,
I don't even know how to describe. It's an approach it's very much your own. It's very kind of singular, and there's an angle sort of always, but it's not really like.
It's kind of, you know, I study Tai Chi.
It's just different. Yeah.
Tai Chi, and the teacher talks about like there's nowhere to land.
It is kind of really Tai Chi. That's a good way
just
to
like
describe
water,
it.
Like moving around.
Yeah, you're kind of like, taking the energy and just kind of moving.
Look at
it.
This tune. Yeah. Wow, what is this thing? You know, and people like want to pin you down. Is this a blues tune? Is this a folk song? What kind of act are you? And I get put into that, you know, folk blues kind of thing. You know, it's like, okay, you know, I'll be that because I'm playing solo and I play blues tunes and I can represent that in the folk crowd, you know, but I'm a little too harsh for that. And then I'm a little too mellow for the, you know, hardcore stuff. And then I come out with an album with a punk rock version of something on it. And the people are like, what is going on here? Can you just pick a genre and go with it? I'm like, no, sorry, I can't.
I mean, it's fun. It's fun to, the playfulness of it all, I think, is
well, and
is
this might explain
charming.
It for you. So a teacher talking about, you know, forms of art. And if you know, sometimes it helps to split things up into thirds, right? So the first kind of element of art is like, you know, the kids' art on the refrigerator, right? It's pure expression, your attention from the mom. There's a communication thing, right? And it doesn't really matter if it's good or bad or whatever. There's like the, oh my God, that's awesome. I'll put it on the refrigerator. Then the second kind of art for me is like, it's, you know, art for profit. It's like, what genre are you in? Can you tour on it? Is it going to be sellable? Can you get the hit? You know, bam, 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 bam.
Yeah.
And I've had some of that success here and there, you know? And I'm always, it's elusive to me. And I wish I was, you know, as famous as Bob Dylan, although I had this weird dream about him one time where I went to his house and he kind of gave me the look and he invited me into his office. I go into his office and there's notebooks everywhere. Notebooks, I mean, just stacks and stacks of notebooks. He gives me another up and down look, you know, and he pulls out this little stack of like, you know, 5 or 6 notebooks. I'm like, this is how much I've written in my life, 5 or 6 notebooks.
Yeah.
And that's his stuff that he's put out in the world. And I'm like, oh, right, but he's written 30,000 other songs. Like, I just don't have that work ethic. You know, I'm pretty much a lazy yogi.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that leads into the last bit of art as a spiritual vehicle. Mm. You know, it's not art for profit anymore. It's art from the prophets. And I'll tell you a short story. I was out playing some random roadhouse in Ohio. I had played there a couple times before. This guy was crazy and, you know, it's usually college towns and awesome, amazing stations like K-Pig that have me because they get that I'm trying to work with the energies and no disrespect. And so this guy, you know, he like had a wolf as a pet, you know, it was like okay. Roadhouse, like, uh-oh, what are you guys cooking up in the back? Hey, whatever, you know. And this guy, this year I was playing it and I usually end the whole show with this old Reverend Gary Davis tune talking about, you know, the prophets singing through us, you know, letting the spirit move you. You know, I don't know what you expected on a Wednesday night having the Reverend preach out here. I'm going to preach at you, baby. You know, so love and tolerance and everything.
Oh, no,
out there.
Yeah, preach right? It. Let's go.
So I end the first set with this tune called It's Gonna Be All Right and get everybody to sing along. You know, hey, all the women and all the men. You know, you've been to a sing-along kind of thing like that. And I'm playing solo. And I'm like, why did I end the first set with that? That's weird. Took a set break, you know. Got a non-alcoholic beverage. I'm going on 20 years sober, you know, one day at a time. Anybody out there suffering with diseases, addiction, just lay your hands on the radio. It's going to be all right. A lot of people want to help you out there. You just got to ask for help. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. And this guy comes up to me and he says, thanks for singing that song, man. You came through here last year and I've been singing that song ever since. And I said, wow. He said, because the day before you came in through town last night and closed with that song, my son died of a drug overdose. And I was like, wow. And the song is like, it's gonna be all right. It's gonna be all right. Deep in my heart, I do believe it's gonna be all right. So that comforted him, you know? That night, he bought out my merch. I was like, dude, this is like the first leg of my tour, bro. Like, you know? I was like, okay, whatever. He bought shirts for all his family and CDs for everybody. And I was like, okay, cool. And but that kind of a power, a spiritual music, you know what I mean? Like, that's what music... I think when we're around the campfire, you know, back time of Memorial, people weren't making, you know.
Yeah, that's when it starts to make a little more sense.
Yeah.
Community and meeting some stranger that you've never met. And yeah.
Changed his life. You know, it comforted him. And there's this great old Buddhist story. Before the Buddha was the Buddha, he was a bodhisattva and he was a consummate musician, apparently, in one lifetime. And there was this master musician and they had this competition, blah, blah, blah. There's a whole little like backstory. But the long story short is that he wins the contest and he goes up to heaven or whatever the Buddhist version is. And, you know, you get that high listening to music, right? And this is the next level of the spirituality. Like, the music brings you to this euphoria. And you see it a lot. I mean, you can see with Jerry Garcia. Like, you get caught up in the lifestyle, right? You know what I mean? With the sex and the drugs and the rock and roll, whatever. What's the Spinal Tap thing? It's like, you know, I could just do sex and drugs. You know, I don't really need the rock and roll. You know, it's like, you know. But he goes up to heaven, and there's all these celestial beings. And he's like, you guys seem to have that, like, music high that I get and give to people while I'm playing music. But you have it all the time. He says, how do you do that? And they say, well, we play the strings of virtue. You know what I mean? They're just good people. And they've been born into this realm where they're just living good, you know? And I'm like, all right, you know, Jesus, maybe my mama read to me too much out of the Bible and that makes sense, you know, or whatever. And it was weird, though, because, you know, when I tripped on LSD and I thought it was Jesus for that weekend, things got a little complicated. No disrespect, you know. love JC and the boys, very cool stuff. But yeah. I just adopted the Buddhist thing. And, geez, I was up at Pema Osling today, and it was just beautiful up there. If you get the chance, amazing. I was at the Land of Medicine Buddha last night, too. Some amazing Buddha centers you guys have right here in the Santa Cruz area. But blah, blah, blah. You know, I could just talk all night, but maybe I'll play another song. Or shall we play one from the album?
Shall we?
Let's do a Green and Brown Blues. I mean, it's just... This is like, geez, 25 years old, and we recorded this at M&I Studios, where a lot of famous jazz albums. I actually was a studio rat there years ago. Did like Ernie Andrews albums and Mark Murphy and Houston Persons, and I was assistant just to, you know, smoke free weed and get access to these amazing blues dudes. But they let us, you know, record in there, and I brought a drummer, Patrick Carmichael, who's an amazing jazz drummer, and this guy, John Bone, Richie Robinson, and we did a trio, and we recorded this blues tune, and then I went, you know, did one overdub with a harmonica and vocal, and it's a tune called Green and Brown Blues.
Green and Brown Blues.
Yeah, love song to the earth, baby.
Yeah, let's check this out. This is an old recording that from...
First track on the new album?
Yeah, cool. And this is the first track. The CD is A Bluesman of Sorts, which is here with Reverend Freakchild. Let's check this thing out. We're taking a little trip back to 2001 here. All right. There you go. There you have it. That's
cool.
Yeah, we're off and running there with a bluesman of sorts.
It's got a laid back attitude, that kind of thing. It was a really beautiful studio. They had a nice Trident board, and the inside of the studio, you know, for musicians listening out there, you know, have all those baffles and foam and everything. They had solved the sort of, you know, unwanted slapback. I'm not a studio guy, but, you know, sort of a cushioning of the studio. I don't even know what you call that. They had put shingles, wood shingles, on the inside of Studio B.
Oh, yeah.
So it just soaked up the sound in this amazing way. But you felt like you were on, like, an old house turned inside out. You're like, wait, these are, like, outdoor shingles that haven't been treated. What is going on? You know, it was a little trippy. And Mitch and Ira, you know, the amazing dudes, the groovy Jews, they would smoke me out every time I'd come there and work. So it was just like, you know. Anyway, going on.
Good times. I mean... I'm sure you got to, I mean, that was one of the things I was going to ask you was going through all these older recordings, you know, it's something that we don't really do a lot of, I feel like, as musicians, especially, you know, it's kind of a lot, I don't know if you can relate to this, but you're kind of focused on the next gig, the next song, the next this, and a chance to kind of look back and collect a group of tunes that you did a long time ago.
Yeah.
Like some of these are going back 25 plus years.
They just never got released, you know? Yeah. And I'm like looking back through, I'm like, why didn't I release this? I mean, there's one tune called Rattlin' Cages down in NYC. We just call it Rattlin' Cages. It's an 8-minute tune about how I got busted in New York City smoking and buying weed. You know, this is kids. This is when it was illegal. You know, you couldn't just stop by the pot shop. You had to go into the park, make sure it was cool with some dude.
I barely can remember.
You know, and then the guy realizes that we're like, jazz musicians, and he's like, oh man, I want to smoke you guys out. And then it was like, wait, what, is somebody arresting me? Ow, that hurts. You know, I don't know if you've ever been handcuffed, but it pinches, you know. So anyway, you know, it's an 8-minute ballad about, you know, battling the Rockefeller laws, which was the three strikes and you're out kind of thing. And I got one strike, and if you go a year, you get expunged. But, you know, I was having friends that were in Colorado even that were looking at, you know, doing serious jail time. And, you know, it got decriminalized there. Then it got, you know, like the medical marijuana thing, and now it's legal. I mean, you can't smoke it on the street. It's like a packy store thing. You have to buy it in the shop and smoke it in your house, private domicile or whatever. That's the code there. You have to pardon me. You know, I got a graduate degree. I hold a Master of Divinity, so I'm gonna put some footnotes in there. But she was this grower. She was like up on charges. She was looking at like 20 years in jail for like, you know, growing and distribution, all that stuff. You know, and it was just after 10 years of putting it off, you know, dismissed. It's like, wow. And, you know, what has happened, I was up at K, whatever that is, K Mud, you know, I'm slightly dyslexic, so it's all like a must. Up in Humboldt County, and they're like, dude, the legalization of weed has decimated this county because it's all corporatized
right
now.
Right.
And at least in New York, I think they gave it the licenses to grow to some former people that got busted. They know how to grow it, and they, you know, hey, man, we'll give you something back, give some of your time back. You know, it's like, and I think the same thing happened in, like, Oregon. You know, you go to Europe and there's red light districts. And they, you know, they give health care to the sex workers. It's like there's no, you know, in America, it's like, you know, they're Puritans in public and perverts in private. It's like people just, hey, man, these things are going to happen. But in Oregon, man, it was like zombie city, man. I was like, whoa, they weren't ready for decriminalizing drugs without the healthcare system supporting it, you know. So anyway, I'm
on it's complicated,
right,
it
is very complicated. You're right.
And, I mean, the thing that you're making me think of was the Denver, or just the Colorado as the land of the kind of that first decriminalization point. I mean, I can remember that when that was a thing. It's like, oh, you go to Colorado, it's legal.
Well, and I was actually, you know, I have a great respect for you doing the DJ thing here because they've been getting me to do the Blues Legacy on Friday nights at the local KGNU station in Boulder. But a guy called in because I was just like saying, oh, Colorado's so awesome. He's like, dude, would you stop bragging on Colorado? We don't want people moving here. Everybody's coming here to smoke free weed. And this is, you know, now it's illegal everywhere, you know, or decriminalized places. But yeah, it was one of the first places. I remember my dad saying, hey, man, because I moved out there to go to graduate school at this little Buddhist university, actually the only accredited Buddhist university in the country called Naropa. And I got my Master of Divinity out there. I legitimized the Reverend Freakchild, the Native American, you know, shaman I work with. He's like, nephew, sometimes art imitates life. Sometimes life imitates art. And I was like, yeah, I don't know what's going on with me, man. I came in through the side door of psychedelics, and I'm just trying to make sense of it through spirituality. Like, woo! You know, I don't even know what I was talking about, but maybe it's time for another tune.
Yeah.
Let's do an old Reverend Gabriel Davis tune here.
Okay, cool.
Well, I got fiery fingers and I got fiery hands. When I die and go to heaven, I'm gonna join that fiery band. Just as long as I'm in this world, I'm the light of this world. Just as long as I'm in this world, I'm the light of this world. Come on, help me, Jamie. Next time I come around.
All right.
Well, prayer's the key to heaven, and faith unlocks the door. That's why my Lord, he gave me the key, and I carry with me wherever I go. Everybody, just as long as I'm in this world, I'm the light of this world. Just as long as I'm in this world, I'm the light of this world. Just as long as I'm in this world, I'm the light of this world. Just as long as I'm in this world, I'm the light of this world. Now you say you don't believe in Jesus? Not a word is said. Even when they go down to Lazarus' grave and raise him from the dead. Just as long as I'm in this world, I'm the light of this world. Just as long as I'm in this world, I'm the light of this world. Just as long as I'm in this world, I'm the light of this world. Just as long as I'm in this world, I'm the light of this world. All right, I'm working on this whistle solo. Here we go. Just as long as I'm in this world, I'm the light of this world. Just as long as I'm in this world, I'm the light of this world. Everybody, just as long as I'm in this world, yeah. I'm the light of this world. Just as long as I'm in this world, I'm the light of this world.
Oh, yeah.
I think that whistle solo needs a little work, but...
I thought it was great.
Thanks. I'm working on it. You know, it was funny. I had a friend in high school, and his dad was sort of this, you know, retired beatnik. He was out of his mind. And he just would school us about, you know, the Beatles and the B flat on the bottom with the Barbershark Quartet and how they were rocking and all this stuff. And we were just like, what, dude? You know, we were just having fun. And one time we were listening to that Jealous Guy tune from John Lennon's solo career. And after the tune, his dad was like, I never knew John actually did it. Because it was from the movie, the Lennon movie. Remember when that came out? It was like, I mean, 80s or 90s. Coming back with the kid with the whistling. But we were watching it at his house, and his dad was like, I never knew John actually did the whistling on that. So that became this joke with anybody who was a whistle or doing it. I never knew John Lennon did the whistling. You know, it's like every song with a whistle.
Yeah, there's some good whistlers out there. It's not as easy as it sounds.
Yeah, and, you know, geez.
Who's been working on it for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, I got a small range
like the embouchure of a whistle is like the embouchure of a horn player. Like, it's muscles that you
got
to do.
It's hard, yeah. I've got like a very small area I can do. It's like 5 notes.
That's enough. That's a pentatonic scale.
Yeah,
Yeah. Awesome.
Cool. Well, we'll keep working on that. Man, I could do this for a lot longer.
Well, thanks for having me,
but
man.
I'm gonna let you go here.
Well, next time we gotta get you to play some piano, man. We'll do a little rocking out.
Yeah, we gotta do that.
All right.
Well, you gotta come back.
I will.
This is, I mean, I believe you because we've been doing this almost every year for a few years now.
I honestly had such a great time. It was the end of my tour here, and I'm heading east tomorrow. I said goodbye to the sea for just until the next time. And I was even thinking, like, I got to go to L.A., you know, January, February for a bunch of dates and stuff like that. And I thought, maybe after those dates, I'll drive north enough. Maybe stop by the Hearst Castle and then come up here, you know.
Once you get there, it's not that far to make it up here. That's
Have you ever been out there, the Hearst Castle?
I've never been to the Hearst Castle.
Nowhere.
Yeah.
I was coming up Pacific Coast Highway because, you know, you got to do it once in your life. And it's just like, dude, how many turns are there going to be coming up the coast? But you go to the Hearst Castle, and you're like, this is out in the middle of nowhere.
Have you done Big Sur before?
Oh, yeah.
That seems like your kind of place.
You know, geez, that's Kerouac writes about that in one of those, and you're just like,
there's got to be
some
Buddhist stuff out there, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, and Buddhism is everywhere. You know, what's the Zen thing? The tongue of the long river is the Buddha's, the hum of the long river is the Buddha's tongue, and the form of the mountains is his body.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Anyway, I'll leave you with that. Thanks for having me, dude.
Yeah, man. You come back anytime. Once again, the CD is A Bluesman of Sorts. It's been out a couple of months. And We'll be playing it here. I got Big Boss Man coming up for you. And hey, man, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
It was
man.
A real pleasure.
Great talking with you.
All right.
Didn't quite grab all of Big Boss Man there, but you can check it out on Reverend Freakchild's new album, A Bluesman of Sorts. Thank you, Reverend Freakchild. Thank you, Jamie Coffis. Always just a fascinating, fun interview from you. And thank you, most of all, listener out there, for checking these out. I get to do these every couple of weeks when we have new interviews, and it's great fun kind of recapping it and archiving these for posterity. So his latest album is called A Bluesman of Sorts. I'll put a link to that in the show notes for this so you can check that out. And coming up probably later this week or sometime very soon, James Durbin was in the studio recently. He's a Santa Cruz resident, probably best known for being on American Idol Season 10 and brought metal music and hard rock to American Idol, which was really fun. He plays all over the Bay Area. And he was in the study recently. We have a couple of his songs at the Pig now. So he'll be up soon. And keep it tuned to the Pig. Keep it subscribed here to Pigs in a Podcast. For K-Pig, I'm Michael Gaither. Talk to you soon. Cheers.